Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Through the Blackwater Bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinner's crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. Your host here, Justin Townsend, and today, this date, on Wednesday, we're going to have a crew chat. Pretty excited about this crew chat. We're going to recant some elk season stories for Colin and I. Recant.
Isn't that when you take back?
Oh, no. Yeah, that's true.
Ooh. Like you recant your story?
Yeah. A recount doesn't work either, I don't think.
To say that no longer holds a opinion or belief. Okay, we're going to recount.
Recap. How about we recap?
Recap.
I just smushed them together. We're going to recount.
Recap.
Or recap. Or recount. Or retell some elk stories. I need to scoot over. I feel like I'm off camera.
We're not retelling them. This is the first time you're telling them, right?
God. No, it's not. We've told them to each other.
First time you're telling them to an audience.
Not to the
you
listeners.
Let me go.
All this in. I'm about to kick you off again.
Can I just tell my story?
I got stuff to do. Anyway. We're going to tell our stories from elk season, and I don't know, I may have already told some of mine briefly, but Colin hasn't because he hasn't been on in a long time. But then also we're going to play Let's Make a Meal, which is going to be fun. That's a cool game that we created last podcast episode for those, not last, well, if you're listening to this, it would be like two ago because I don't think, well, no, we didn't do it the last one. Because that was my antelope experience in Southern Colorado. But then we're going to talk about some breakfast recipes because we've broached the subject. Is that a correct use of the word, Corey? Broached?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, I would agree.
Thank you. I have to call Dr. Ben on. We have broached the subject of breakfast recipes several times. Hit the tip of the breakfast iceberg, but never fully submerged into the world of breakfast wild game foods. And we actually have a lot of resources on our website. I've written some cool recipes for Meat Eater in the realm of breakfast. I feel like if you put an egg with it, it automatically becomes a breakfast food. Do you guys agree?
It's funny how that happens, yes.
Yeah, I feel like you could easily turn something from like the previous night into breakfast by just adding an egg.
Yep, I agree. So we're gonna save that because we're gonna come back to it. But let's tell the tales of two elk. Well, I guess first let's do some updates. So for me, the big thing is we just wrapped up, obviously, antelope. If you're listening to this, been doing some work on the adventure van. If you scroll over to Instagram. You can see a cool picture of the cool my cool creepy van that's going to metamorphosize into this really awesome adventure van. And then I've been prepping bicycles, my two mountain bikes, to go into the backcountry of wild Wyoming and for mule deer and antelope coming up here in the next couple days. I don't know. I haven't told you guys my setup. I have like a full setup on my bike now.
You have the little hooks to put your rifle in?
No, I don't. I didn't get that yet. I was going to, and then I ran out of time to order it on Amazon.
Yeah, those are... I had them hooked up to my cargo trailer that I was towing behind my bike. Those are a game changer.
Are they? Damn it.
Yeah.
I wonder if I can get them.
I saw some dude, old timer out there in like jeans and a t-shirt, archery hunting, had them mounted on his bike handles, and he had his bow in front of his bike handles.
Yeah, I was going to put them on my bike handles, like a four-wheeler, and just have it going across, because there's not much trees and brush and debris in the wilds of Wyoming to like knock my rifle. I still may see tonight if I can order it and get them in tomorrow before I leave on Friday, because you're right, I think it would be like a total game changer to have them, and it's like the last piece of equipment that I needed. I went to REI the other day and was buying some dehydrated meals and stuff, and I went up to, they have like a, what's equivalent of like a bargain cave for like returns or damaged things or whatever, and they mark things down, and they had like a fat tire rack, because I have a fat tire bike, and they had the rear rack, and I was like, okay, that's cool. So I got that. They didn't sell the hardware with it. They only had one mounting bracket, but no screws whatsoever. But my bike has two of the screws, so I wasn't really worried about that. And then I just rummaged around in my garage and found the remainder pieces. But I got it at half price. It was regularly like $90, and I got it for like $40. So I was super stoked for that. And it holds 100 pounds. So then I went to the local Bass Pro Shop here. I feel like I'm shouting out all the brands when I shouldn't be, but I am. And bought two, you know, like, picture like a JanSport backpack, just like a plain backpack, but camouflaged. And I got that, and I mounted it to the rack on the back of the bike.
So you made, like, saddlebags?
Yeah. I made two saddlebags out of the backpacks, and I just zip-tied them in probably like 15 places to the frame, so they're like sturdy on the frame. But they've got like zippered pockets, they've got the big part, so I figure like it could probably fit, you know, at least like an antelope quarter in each side, and then put the rest on my back or whatever if I'm doing antelope. For mule deer, I don't know. Maybe just divide up the weight a little bit. But definitely like kind of cool. So did that all kind of on the cheap too, which is good. But now I'm definitely thinking about this rifle mount. I don't know, what else do you have on your bike?
I don't have anything on my bike except for like the little cargo rack above the rear tire, and then I have the trailer that hooks up to it. That's pretty much it.
Did you... The trailer's pretty useful?
Yeah, I mean, it holds up to like a little bit over 100 pounds. And, nice. I mean, it's loud. That's the only thing. Is when we used it the first day for my elk season, and it was loud. So, like, I don't know if we really, like, spooked anything away, because sound travels weird out there, or at least out here. Sometimes you can hear things, like, forever off, like a bugle, or you can not hear something on, like, the other ridge. So, it's weird. But, yeah, it's loud. I mean, it would have been great for carrying stuff out, but after the first day, I just kept it in my car, and we would bike in or walk in, and then if we got something, then we would walk out and then hook it up and bring it back in. That was the plan, at least.
Nice. And Corey, what did...
And I could hold my bow onto it, and then I could put my bag back there, or, you know, whatever I need to, back in the actual trailer.
That's pretty cool. Corey, you've done some bicycle hunting, too.
Yeah, but I didn't modify the bike any. I just had a backpack on and carried my stuff on that.
Got it. Okay.
And it wasn't super deep in. I think we, and it was like a access road that was gated off. So it was like a gravel road, so it wasn't hard biking. So it wasn't like mountain biking or anything.
Oh, no. Neither is where we're going. And like some of it's, it is like walk-in access only or walk-in and horses, but we reached out to like fishing game up there and they're like, yeah, like as long as your bicycle doesn't have a motor on it, like you can take it on those, you can take it on those trails, like you should be good. So pretty stoked. At least it let us get back there before some of the other hunters do, which would be good, given the area we're hunting this year. So I don't know. Let's see, other news. We have spice blends. So obviously we have lots of spice blends, but our most recent one, I just got word from the mixologist of spices today that our waterfowl blend should be coming very, very soon. So hopefully by the end of the month that will be up on the Harvest of Nature website for sale. Keep an eye on social media. We'll make a big huge announcements and shoot confetti whenever it's released.
Yeah, I think those would make really good Christmas gifts for the hunter or angler in your family, your friend.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Stocking stuffers.
Yep. Yeah.
That's our fourth blend coming out, so we will likely sell them as one big set or sell them individually. We have one more blend queued up, our small game one, but due to some delays of getting spices from Israel, which is where we needed some of the spices to come from, that one is delayed, but we will push it out as soon as it is in stock and mixed and we have it. So pretty excited about that. But so let's see, what do you guys got?
When was the last time I was on?
I don't know.
Do you remember the last time I was on? It's been a while. I guess a lot has happened.
4 weeks. I don't know.
A lot has
happened.
Yeah. I mean, relatively speaking. Did I talk to you about our squirrel hunting success?
Nope. Or your goose or your duck. None of that. You haven't talked about any of it.
Okay. Well, I would classify this early part of the season as very successful for the Sly household. So I've taken my kids out individually for squirrel hunting, and my daughter got a squirrel. She was shooting, and then my oldest son and I limited out on squirrels. We got three fox squirrels that are pretty relatively rare for this area, and then me and my youngest son went out and we limited out on gray squirrels. And then we've gone out goose hunting. I went out twice this year. And what we do is we paddle in a canoe down the river and we, find a flock of geese and strategize how we're going to get them. And we've done that twice this year. And the first time between five guys, we got 12. Two of them were banded, and then me and another friend went down by ourselves, and we got five between the two of us, and one of them was banded. And then the first day of archery season, I harvested a doe, which was it was like the smoothest hunt you could put together. If you were like, I want my hunt to go really smooth, this is how I'd want it to go, and that was my hunt. So got in the stand, before light. I think shooting hours were a little bit before 7 or something like that, and sat for like 2 hours and saw these two coming in, and it was like 30 seconds. I saw them, picked up the bow. It stepped in front of a tree that I had already ranged at 23 yards and put the, aim for the just behind the front shoulder and shot. And my lighted nock was staring at me in the ground, stuck in the ground. But I'm impatient. I thought I heard a crash, but I'm impatient. So I got down and to check out my arrow, and it was covered, in blood. And from where I was standing where the arrow hit, I could see the white belly of the deer. And it was easy gut job, easy drag, or relatively easy. There is nothing that reminds you you're out of shape more than dragging out a deer by yourself.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I'm out of shape. But by... So I shot the deer...
So to get to the point of that, Corey's out of shape.
All right. I shot the deer at 9 o'clock. By 1 o'clock, it was quartered and in my garage fridge. So it went pretty smooth. And then the opening day of duck was last weekend. And I managed, me and another friend went. He has a Boykin Spaniel, my friend Jeremy. He's been on the podcast a couple times. His pup's still pretty young. He's only one or two. And we haven't had a whole lot of duck hunting success. But we finally got into him this past weekend. And PA, the limit is 6 per person. But it, like, you can only get one mallard hen. You can only get, like, 3 wood ducks. You can only get one of this or 2 of that. It's very... You have to identify your ducks very well before you shoot them. And we did a pretty good job of that. We each got a hen mallard. We each got a drake mallard. And I got a hen wood duck. So that was a pretty successful morning, and that was all within like the first hour, and his dog did pretty well retrieving them. And so I plucked three of them and skinned 2 of them, so we'll see how that goes. The wood duck is surprisingly, it's like half the size of the mallard, so not being an experienced duck hunter, I don't know if it was like a young wood duck or if that's just typical, but it was pretty small.
I think they're typically a little smaller.
Wood ducks?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're a little bit smaller.
And then my daughter has shown some interest in deer hunting, so we sat in the blind Saturday evening. And I have a crossbow, and I bought a tripod for it, and she shot off the tripod and was pretty good with that at 20 yards. It's like, all right, if anything 20 yards, she's going to, you know, take a shot at it. And went over, you know, looked up pictures of deer, you know, standing broadside on the internet. And I'm like, okay, where are you going to aim? And she would point. So she knew where to aim, but we were sitting and at the edge of a field, and the deer came out, but they were about 60 yards away. And, you know, they were feeding, and they bedded down, so, you know, we kind of stopped paying attention to them. And, you know, you could tell she was getting a little bored. And then all of a sudden, there was one, I think it was from that group that was further away. All of a sudden, it was like 20 yards away, and we weren't ready. And she tried to get behind the tripod to get set up to shoot. It didn't go well, and we spooked the deer. And then they had off school on Monday, and I took a day off work. So every day my wife takes the kids to school, she always sees them at the corner of this one field. I'm like, all right, we'll try that in the morning. I typically don't hunt fields in the morning, but she was pretty consistent on seeing these deer. So like, all right, we have a chance. So we got in early, we set up the blind, I brushed it in pretty well. Try to be as quiet as possible, but it's hard, you know, setting up a blind and stuff. And she was good. She sat. She didn't get cold. Only a little bored. But we didn't see anything. Nothing.
She's a better hunting companion than me.
And then Tuesday morning when my wife was taking him to school, of course, there's deer right where we had the blind set up. So... That was a little frustrating, but that's how hunting goes, right? So that's been my season so far. I'm it I sounds- mean if it if yeah, if it ended today, I'd consider it pretty successful. So I sent in my head for CWD testing. I'm still waiting on the results for that. So we'll see how that goes. But coming up, I got the pup. Pheasant season starts not this weekend, but the following weekend. So we'll see. Get him out there. See what he does. I have zero expectations. I just don't want him to run away. So that's my only goal is, okay, don't run away. So see how it goes.
Yeah, no, that's a good goal. Losing your dog in the field is not good. I think they make those like trackers, so.
Yeah, I looked into collars. I looked into GPS collars, and I'm not quite ready to drop $1,000 on a collar. Not
just
quite
get an Apple AirTag. Just like
that's exactly what my wife. That's exactly what my wife said.
I mean, I think that's like a definitely. Actually. What are those like $50 or something like that?
Like 30, yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty inexpensive. Nice. Well, it definitely sounds like a really fruitful season for you so far. I'm a little jealous. I shot a jackrabbit. That's all I've shot this year. But I have thought about shooting really cool things and eating them as well. So let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about some elk hunting. Oh, wait, Colin, do you want to give updates, or you just want to include your updates as part of your...
Yeah, my only update is that I've been elk hunting for all September. and so then I'll just go into that, I guess. Anyway, hey, everybody, this is Colin. I hunted the entire September archery season out here in Oregon. It's my first archery season. It was a lot of fun. I'd say it's my favorite hunting season yet, despite not getting anything.
Did you hunt every day, or how many days in September did you hunt?
I hunted 21 days out of the 30-day season.
Wow.
Holy smokes. Yeah. You prescribed to the Dr. Ben method.
Yeah, Dr. Ben was there for a lot of them. He was there for opening weekend, and he was there for the second to last weekend and the last weekend, and then most of that week in between. So both of us are, Dr. Ben and I, are well on our way to becoming total degenerate elk hunters. Ben lived out of his truck for at least 20 days in a row, just going around from spot to spot. And you can definitely smell it on him, too. But yeah, no, it was a great time. I mean, for the first... it was my first archery season. It was my first season hunting the rut for elk. So I expected... I had all these areas planned out. I was getting them on trail cams. I had this whole, like, probably 20 square mile, maybe 40 square mile area that was, like, patterned out. I knew where they were. I knew what times they were up and where they were going and everything. Well, then, like, 4 days before the season started, they disappeared. Like, wasn't getting anything on the cameras. Went to the spots anywhere where I was seeing them, and, nothing to be found. So I think we didn't really get into them, but we saw a bull and two cows on the second day, went after them, and lost it in the woods. I mean, the woods here are so dense. You know that, Justin, from bear hunting out here. It's so easy to lose stuff. I mean, you basically have an animal the size of a horse, and then take 40 of them, and they can disappear into the woods in seconds, and you'll never see them again. It's nuts. And if anybody wants to challenge me on that, feel free. Come at me. But that's what happens.
So, you are a true degenerate elk hunter. I love it.
So that's what happens. So anyway, I went out pretty much every day I could. There's a couple weekends here that I had to travel for. And then I took some, I guess you'd call them like mental health days. I don't want to burn myself out going out there every day and just not seeing anything. So there was like a day or two here and there where I just like chilled at home. But then finally it was, we're like, pretty much what everything online says, the third week of September. So that Saturday, I was walking through the area that... So I had two bulls show up on a trail cam the day before, and I was walking through that area, and it was probably 6:30 in the morning. The sun was a few minutes from from coming up, and I just hear this choo-choo-choo-choo-choo in the woods. And at first I was like, I mean, I'd watched like a whole bunch of videos and stuff, you know, I did all like the calling practice and everything. And at first I was like, what the F is that? I was like, what is making that noise? And then it just like hit me. I was like, oh, there's a bull in there and it's chuckling. He's trying to round up his cows. So I stood there for about probably 30 minutes waiting for him to come out. It was right along a logging road, kind of a cutout logging road. And he never came out, ended up hearing a bugle a little bit farther away, so I think he went the opposite direction. But it was still pretty cool to hear that sound, like, finally, like, oh yeah, they do make that noise. They are here. I know where they are. Still didn't see anything during that day, but then I went around to a different area where I thought that they went to, and this is later at night, and I was like, you know what, I'm walking on my way out, there's probably like 30 minutes of light left, I'm just going to check this one area and see if I can hear anything or smell anything or something like that. So I'm walking out and I hear some crunching going on, I hear some cows calling, and I was like, oh great, there's cows here. I heard him crash into the woods. I think I bumped him a little bit. I get no light at this point. I mean, I'm like 5 minutes from shooting light being over. And I just hear this like ripping, bone-chilling bugle. Just, it must have been 80 yards, 60, 80 yards away from me. Just ripped through there. And that was like, that was when I, and this is the first day of the rut too. And that's when I knew it was like, all right, it's like, this is hunting season. This is a lot of fun. The past 2 weeks of being out here and just like not seeing anything are now worth it. So I texted Ben that, and was like, because he kept going to areas and was like, oh man, there's nothing here, I'm going to somewhere else. And then I kept texting him and was like, oh man, there's more elk here, I just keep hearing bugles. And so he kept driving back up, like another hour back up, and then he'd be like, oh no, there's nothing here, and then he'd drive back down and then come up the next day. So yeah, we went out a couple more days. Then one of the next mornings, we found some walking through a big clear cut, rounded a corner, and there is a just beautiful 5x5 elk, real tall antlers, real wide, standing right in the middle of the road. Like, it was like picturesque. The sun's hitting the grasses; it's all yellow. You can just see this perfect elk there. So we tried to go after that one. It kind of went through the woods a little bit, and then as we rounded a corner, it was 30 yards away from us and spooked and ran into the woods. And then I had to go to work, so that sucked. and Ben was out there. I think he chased it for a little while, but nothing happened. A couple more times, we actually got a pretty good video of us chasing a bull into the woods. I think it was actually that night, maybe the next night. And we put a video up on our socials with this elk bugling to us through the woods. It must have been 40 yards away from us, but again, real close to end shooting light.
Is that the wiffle ball, the wiffle ball bat bugle?
There's a video of that up too, of Ben calling through his wiffle ball bat bugle tube. but this one is, it starts off, it's kind of dark, you can tell it's evening. I'll repost it again, but it's he's doing a couple calls, and then you just hear this bugle rip through the woods, and we can never get that elk to come out and actually get in shooting light. But yeah, that's a funny story. So Ben lost his bugle tube at some point, his actual like manufactured one. And so he went to Walmart the next day and bought an Easton wiffle ball bat and cut off the ends of it. And honestly, this thing sounded great. It sounded so great that on the last Sunday of the season, he called in three bears to it. So we're walking along a road that we had been seeing elk on, and we hear some rustling.
Is it this one?
I can't see. There's a glare on it. Yeah, that's it. Looks kind of like that one. Maybe. I don't know. I can pull it up.
That one?
No. Oh. That's Ghost Rider in the Sky.
Oh, so it's this one.
Yeah.
I don't know where the sound comes out at.
Just give it a second. That's the elk. And that's Ben's wiffle ball bat. Yep. So, That was the night we got pretty close to one. That's probably the closest we got. But yeah, the last Sunday, we hear this like rustling through the woods. Ben and I are both drawn back, ready to shoot. And this head pops out, and it was totally not what I expected, because I was fully expecting a bull elk to pop out of this thing, and like, yeah, here we are. This is finally it. But no,
like
instead,
what you
just
see
like,
in like the YouTube videos of like straight up encounters,
Because we had been seeing elk there, we knew they were around, we knew there were bulls around, because we've been hearing them, we've been seeing them. So I was fully expecting just a bull elk to walk through. It was much bigger than a deer, the sounds were. But instead, this like black head that was lowered to the ground pops out. And my immediate thought was like, is this like a dog? Or like, we don't have wolves here, it can be a wolf. Like, what is this thing? And then I saw the second half of its body, and I saw like the rounded rump. And I was like, oh, that's a bear. And right then it looked at us, and I actually shot, and right as I shot, it moved. It scurried across the road. So I missed. My arrow bounced up. It was lost in the woods somewhere. And then it went back across the road. We think it had a cub behind it, because we heard some smaller crunches behind it when we saw it. So that was cool. Saw a bear. And then we went up to this other clear cut, spent some time there. For like the middle of the day, it was pretty warm out. It's actually still warm out here in almost the middle of October. It was 80 degrees today, so it's pretty warm here. And then as we're walking back down from our kind of like midday rest, a much bigger bear pops out of the woods, like same distance, 40-50 yards. And we didn't shoot at that one. That one was over and that was out and back in the woods within 2 seconds.
Wow.
So that was cool. And then at the very end of the night, we were chasing some cows in a creek bed. We were kind of up in the middle of the clear cut, and we heard some crunching, classic sticks breaking and everything. So we went down to this area where we knew it was a choke point right at the stream. It would have been perfect. And we thought we heard cows calling too. That's why we were going after them. And then it must have been one of these bears. We're not sure which one, but popped out again and ran up the hillside. So three bears in one day. Up until then, I've only seen the ones that we saw bear hunting. So
yeah, wow.
And that was what, one on one day? Yeah.
One
so that was, yeah, that was really awesome. Ran into a mountain lion, had a mountain lion encounter. It's 40 yards away from that.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that. I think I was telling somebody about that the other day. Like, I want to hear more about that.
Yeah. Well, right now, and this will be a little bit later, there's a video going around of a mountain lion chasing a guy.
I saw like, that. Yeah.
Kind of stalking him in a field. Have you guys seen that one today?
Yep.
I think like Joe Rogan posted it and stuff, and the guy has his pistol out. And I think he shoots at it, but I don't think he hits it. So I was in an area where there's an early deer season in Oregon. So in the middle of September, there's a week for early, the controlled deer season, but it's like not really controlled. Everybody gets a tag who puts in for it. But I went to an area that I've been seeing a little 2x2 buck on my trail cams there. So I was standing pretty much 40 yards away up the road from my trail cam for like multiple days in a row. I saw it somewhere between like 5 p.m. and like 7 p.m. So I was like, perfect, I'm just going to sit here. I know there's elk here too, you know, there's elk right around the corner. So I'm hanging out there, look down at my phone for something, look back up, and I notice this like new shape out of my corner of my eye. So it's like, oh, cool, maybe this is the deer I've been looking for. So I pulled my range finder like real slow. I want to make sure I get the range right. It's a little bit farther away. It's like right at the edge of my comfortable shooting zone. And as I'm looking through the rangefinder, I notice it's 40 yards. But then I'm looking at the face, and I'm like, that's not a deer. And I see the lines, like the dark lines and the nose on it. And like instantly, every hair on my body stood up. My heart rate jacked up. My adrenaline spiked. And I was like, that's a lion. Like, oh my God. Like, I'd seen it on my trail cameras before. I never once expected that I would actually see it walking around, and it's right in front of me. So I brought my bow up and was in the process of drawing back when it pounced away, and it was totally silent. I never heard it approach, and I never heard it, even watching it sprint away, I never heard it make a noise, which is terrifying. I mean, it was awesome. It's probably the coolest experience I've had, besides the elk just screaming at us from like 30-40 yards away. But terrifying at the same time. So I posted a picture of that one too. I captured it. This is another scary part. I didn't capture it walking in front of my trail cam, but I captured it sprinting away. So it had been walking underneath the like lower level of my trail cam limit, which is kind of cool.
That's insane. Just like,
yeah. But yeah, there's a picture, and it's a little blurry. It's very fast, and it's a little far away. But yeah, mountain lion's pouncing off, and I'm 40 yards to the left of it. So that was pretty cool. Saw a bobcat from far away, too, so I had every predator out there to be seen. So it was really neat. It was a lot of really good experiences out in the woods. That's why it's my favorite season so far. I did recap the really good and bad parts of my elk season in the next issue, the fall issue of the magazine. So you can read about more of the experiences in there. I had two polar opposite experiences with fellow hunters out there that you can read about, and I'd actually like to hear some opinions on one of them. Yeah, I had a really great experience, like public land experience with a hunter, and a really poor one. So take a look at the magazine.
Yeah, that's crazy. I think we talked about the really poor one before, you and I, just like personally, I think.
Yeah, the really great one was almost
I won't give it away. Read the magazine.
It was a more egregious error on my part, in my opinion. But it ended up with me and a stranger and a bull screaming at us at 100 yards. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but read about the rest of the details and the comparison between the two in the fall issue.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I actually, just not to cut you off, but I will because I'm not Corey. Yeah, I don't raise my hand.
You didn't raise your hand, but.
So I was working on the recipe yesterday and today, and I shot the photographs for it today for my antelope recipe. Pretty excited. It's a curry of sorts. I'm not going to tell you what type, but it's, man, so good. I took it to work today and let people taste test it, and they're like, "This is amazing." And I was like, "Thanks."
Nice.
Okay.
So I think Ben and I are going to get Washington tags for elk now, over-the-counter rifle tags for right across the river from me in Washington, so we can continue our degenerate elk hunting experience.
When is that? And,
it's November 5th through 12th.
Oh,
and
nice.
And it's like the same. It's the same like landscape, same environment as here. There's a very low percentage we want to go hunt. There's like a 12% success rate or something in those areas, but. Again, we're degenerates now, so we're going to be going over there and wasting more money and looking for them. So, yeah,
sleeping in your truck and riding bicycles and, you know,
yeah,
bathing via wet wipe. Yeah,
yeah. There's some swamps over there you can rinse off in. So
find some Nutria. Scott Oyster Bays wants you to find Scott Nutria.
Yeah. Well, I lost the farm that I was hunting Nutria and geese on, actually. They leased their farm out, so we don't have any access to that anymore.
That sucks.
Yeah. But, in other words, did you hear that Maryland has now officially been eradicated of all Nutria?
No.
Yeah. I was on Ryan Callahan's show the other day.
Oh, cool. I
heard it.
No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Ooh, and some other conservation news. I like this one because it's a hot topic here in Colorado. They CPW, which is Colorado Parks and Wildlife, that's our state wildlife agency, they sent out an email because I subscribe to their news, stuff like that, and they are investigating a wolf depredation about 100 miles from where the pack is known to be at. And I guess there hasn't been a instance of a predatory act from wolves in probably like 4 years or so. But last year on the ballot, they voted to bring in more wolves into Colorado. So this is likely the first of many instances of such a thing. But on social media, I follow, I don't know what specifically she does with Colorado Parks and Wildlife, but they sent a bunch of probably biologists and wardens and folks up to Wyoming and Montana to learn some of the techniques to come back and teach the ranchers here to like prevent wolf attacks basically on their stock. But they said that all that is not truly 100% effective, that it's usually only lasts about 2 weeks and then the wolves kind of figure out a way around it or aren't deterred anymore. And then so it's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see this whole process play out. I almost wrote a news article on it and posted it on the Harvest of Nature website, but I did not because I wanted to like call the state and try to figure out who the landowner was and like call them and kind of get some thoughts and ideas. But I'm still on the fence. I'm watching it play out to see if I want to discuss it more. But definitely pretty interesting because you don't often hear about the wolf activities like that.
Yeah, probably have some controversial opinions about wolves. Well, just like people who are pro wolf hunting and anti wolf introduction.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting because part of the range that they've identified as encompasses like three of the major ski areas in Colorado. So they're all pretty like heavy populated ski towns. And then like you have these slopes up on the side. And it's just like,
I mean, they're going to stay away from those areas. Like, at least they're going to keep their distance, you know? Like, it's not like there's going to... I don't think there's going to be, like, wolf attacks. I mean, if you released, like, tigers in there, maybe. But I think
wolves are generally... We're voting on that next year.
Yeah. Let's reintroduce tigers to America. I think that'll be fine.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm eager to see, like... how it plays out. It's either going to be like a conservation success story or it's going to be a conservation failure. I guess there's really no other option for it to be, but it'd be interesting to see it come through and people be like, oh yeah, like you really can, you know, live synchronous with
wolves, symbiotic.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going for. I'm like...
Or any predators, really. I mean, any predators for that matter, you know? Like... I'm out in line and two bears and a bobcat and any number of coyotes in pretty much my backyard. They're not going out and like, there's plenty of farms around here. Tillamook cheese is like, this is the area. So
man,
there's plenty
of
cows.
Had some of that cheese last night. It was delicious.
The cheese is pretty good. I will say their cheese is pretty good. Their ice cream is also fantastic too. If you're ever on the Oregon coast and you go through Tillamook, go to the Tillamook Creamery. Man, it's good. Best grilled cheese I've ever had.
Okay, so now that was easy for food. So let's do. Are you guys ready to play Let's Make a Meal?
Yeah.
Are you ready, Corey?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, he looks ready.
He looks ready. I'm going to play the sound, and then I'll tell you the rules. Ready? Here's the sound. It's time to make a meal. Did you guys hear that or no?
That sounds like a game show. What do we win?
Yeah.
Yep.
You win nothing. You win. So Adam Berkowitz and I, when we created this, whole segment on the spot the other day. We were basically like, now we have to recreate these meals and like post the actual recipe because like we came out with kind of general guidelines of like something to do. I forget what was our last one. It was like it was a Marzen braised goose legs with egg noodles and like sautéed red cabbage. Colin, you would really like that meal. That's like one
I would like that.
You made before.
I've got a whole goose in my freezer that I need to figure out what to do with because the last thing I tried was basically made a chemical attack in my house. So.
I just did a goose leg confit, and we used the meat to make a stew. So we put it in a stew with local sweet corn that we roasted over the fire, roasted tomatoes that we pureed. The tomatoes were from our garden. Roasted carrots that were from our garden. I'm trying to think. I think I had some... wild game stock in that. One It was, I don't know if I didn't rinse off the legs and thighs before I put them, before I cooked them, because it was pretty salty. Oh, and we put local bacon in it too. Locally butchered pig. Ooh. We got some bacon, or bacon ends, and put in there. And so I don't know if if it was too much salt because of the bacon, or if I didn't rinse enough of the cure off on the from the goose legs. But I didn't have goose fat, so I did it in pork lard. But it was a little on the salty side. But what we did to cut out that the saltiness was we just spooned it over mashed potatoes, and it was really good that way.
Nice. All right. Well, we're still gonna do Let's Make a Meal.
Sorry, so, I went off on a tangent.
It's okay.
No, it's good. So, I need goose ideas because
yeah. So
are here. Yeah.
So on Let's Make a Meal, the rules are: as I scroll through Instagram, so just whatever Instagram feed I have up at the time, and the first cut of meat, like raw piece of meat that I see, is what we use as our base, and then we build something from that. You know, I told you what we'd created previously. I'm still looking for a chunk of raw meat. Instagram's gonna hear me and show me now. Let's see. There's a lot of people talking. It's a lot of reels nowadays.
You could just search meat, probably, and something will come up.
No. I don't want to do that.
I mean, isn't this biased on your algorithm, though?
Well, it's not. I mean, it's the Harvesting Nature page.
We need, like, a random meat generator online. You know how they have, like, random number generators? We need one to, like, just randomly show us some kind of cut of meat.
Random protein generator?
Yeah, protein. That's probably better.
Ooh, random too. Protein.
Tofu.
Alright, here's one. Just regular venison steaks. So.
Oh, wow.
Alright. Let's do it. That was like the first one. It took me a minute. Alright, venison steaks. Not backstrap. Let's picture like steaks off the back quarter. So.
Alright.
What do we want to do with them? Do we want to grill them? Do we want to pan fry them? Do we want to pound them flat and batter them like schnitzel? Let's think. What are some options?
Sous vide, well, pan sear.
I want to try something different.
Yes.
I want to try something different.
Okay.
Why?
And we'll save the sous vide and sear for the backstrap, but for this, so. Justin and I were having a conversation. Was it last night or the night before? I just foraged a bunch of chestnuts from up the road.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I was doing a little research on those because, like, I was like, "Kids, fill your pockets." And I filled my pockets, and we brought them home. I had a lot more than what I realized we had, so we have all these chestnuts. I was like, "Okay, we got to figure out a way to use them all." So I was doing a little research, and so, you know, you roast them in the oven so you can peel the shells off, and then you can, depending on how you cook them, they somewhat resemble potatoes, like the consistency of potatoes. So I was thinking, like a venison stew, but use the chestnuts in it. For like the starchiness, I don't know if chestnuts are starchy, but like that texture that you would have potatoes for, swap out the potatoes with the chestnuts.
So would you cook? So we would take this and we would chop it up and we'd cook it inside. We'd cook it inside with the chestnuts.
Yes. So, I'm thinking you cube up the steak. You cube up. So when you say something from the hind corner, I'm thinking like a steak roast or top round or bottom round or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
Cube that up and like brown it a little bit, and then into Dutch oven with the chestnuts. And I don't know what else you'd want to put in there. Maybe stock. Some stock.
We're gonna put in. We're definitely gonna put in stock. Let's put in some aromatics. So let's get some onion and some carrot. Maybe you think those would go with the chestnuts?
Yeah, and I did heirloom carrots this year in the garden. So I have those like purple, orange, yellow, and white carrots. So
I like it. Colin, what do you think? What do you think we should spice this with?
I mean, my go-to answer is going to be Harvesting Nature's Wild Digging Blend.
Yes.
But if you're going to use, like, you're doing, like, carrots and you're browning it a little bit, if you're going for, like, a fall type recipe, I'd say throw some nutmeg in there.
Ooh. I think we used...
Not too much. Just a little bit.
Did we use nutmeg or allspice last time? I forget. But, okay. So, let me write this down because we kept track of it last time. So, we've got steak... cubed with chestnuts, with carrots and onion, stock. Let's see, do we want to add, what about thyme? I really like thyme right now.
All I have is thyme.
I love
baby.
Thyme. Thyme is on our side.
Time is on our side. All right, so we got time.
So would you want to put like a wine in there to like add some depth to the flavor? Or like a, I don't know, a grape juice or something like that?
Not grape juice.
I don't normally have wine in at home, so but I have grape juice.
I mean, let's try some wine.
I think wine would be the preferred, but you could substitute grape juice, right?
Why? Why would you substitute it?
I don't normally have wine. No, I don't normally have wine. So instead of wine, grape juice would be.
Oh, but to cook in?
Yeah, to throw, splash some in there to.
Oh, I would
depth.
Still use the wine.
Yeah, let's.
The
let's
best right, recipes I've ever had. Yeah, you go buy some, Corey. You go buy it.
you buy a bottle of wine. You cook a cup with a cup, and then you drink the rest of the bottle. That's how you cook with
all
wine.
All right. All right.
There are things called groceries you purchase from the store, and that's typically how people get their food. Not everybody can just harvest everything that they eat from their own backyard like you. Mr. Six Deer a Year. Jeez.
I feel some dirtbag elk frustration pent up.
Degenerate. We prefer the term degenerate.
Okay. Well, all right, I think we've got that. And then, so we've got all that simmering now. Get a little starchy. I don't know. I honestly don't know, like, how this would come out. I think it would be good. Like, I think wine and chestnuts traditionally go together. I think it's kind of like an Italian thing to, like, eat them paired in some way. But yeah, it seems like we could try it out. Now, Corey, let me ask you this. Like, with the chestnuts, do they kind of fall apart? Or do they stay, like, their consistent shape?
So, I haven't... So, I've roasted them to take off the shell. And, like, when you're peeling the shell off, they'll, like, break in half. And then we've... my wife used some to bake with. And, you know, they stayed consistent, but I haven't cooked them for any amount of time. Like, I haven't cooked them this way at all, so I don't know from my own experience, just looking at some recipes and techniques online. You know, I found that, you know, they're supposed to take on the consistency of a potato.
So we would end up almost like a red wine potato soup.
Kind of, yeah. With venison, yeah.
With venison. Huh. Yeah, I don't know. I don't...
I think...
Like it could definitely be done. I think it would probably require a little tweaking. But yeah, I don't think why not.
I think I may try it because I have a bunch of chestnuts left. And
yeah,
I have
let's do it.
I have a few deer in the freezer that I could try it on.
Yeah, we know.
Will you be the first to cook one of our make a meal segments? I think so. We'll have to post it on social, so take a picture.
Yeah. I'll take a picture.
All right.
But also with the chestnuts being like potato consistency, I thought about, you know, could you do instead of mashed potatoes, mashed chestnuts somehow? Like, could you do, like,
yes,
something like that? You know what I mean?
Yes.
And what could you add to it?
Well, just in a quick search in the Google machine, they have a like chestnut puree. Looks like they slow simmer the chestnuts, add sweetened milk and vanilla. So that's like a sweet rendition of it. But
would that be more like a soup, or would that be more like a mashed potato type?
It'd be kind of like the thickness of like grits, maybe.
It'd be a little runnier than mashed potatoes.
So to wrap up the chestnut conversation, like I really think that you could probably mash it like mashed potatoes. But I think like, do you want it sweet or do you want it savory? So I would treat it, if you want it sweet, just like they said, like maybe like sweetened condensed milk and like a little bit of vanilla. I don't know. Just thin it out with some cream or something. I honestly don't know. Thinking of like kind of a runny grits or that consistency of like a thick oatmeal or something is probably what you get. I don't know how, like, I think about you and your kiddos and like if you could get your kiddos to eat it, if it looked like goop.
Yeah. Yeah. I got enough I can experiment with if I have time.
Yeah. The other thing I was thinking is like if you want to take it the other way is like definitely just add cream. Treat it just like mashed potatoes. Like add cream, add butter, add pepper, add salt, add garlic powder, and just like see how it comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, I might do that. Just to.
And then what I thought would be really cool is too is if you took the chestnuts, made them like mashed like that, and then made like croquettes, like they have like Cuban ham and cheese croquettes. You know what I'm talking about, Colin. Represent Key West. But
I know the Dutch version, which are awful.
No,
you basically have like pureed meat inside of a fried dough. It's gross.
No, this one's like you basically take the meat and you take mashed potato and you wrap around it or like form it around it and then you roll it in breadcrumbs and you fry it. And it's like really, really good. They're like picture like my finger, like that big. They're about that big. For all those that can see my finger.
I saw your finger.
Thanks. Yeah. I would do that. I would just try it out, like you said, just experiment with it. But report back. We want to hear it.
Yeah.
And if it turns out really good, we got to publish some stuff about it because there is a lot of chestnut stuff out there, but not a lot of like stuff that's appealing to me. They want to keep putting cherries and stuff in it, and I don't like cherries. So.
And what I've been trying to do, and I think we've talked about this before, is challenge myself to incorporate more than just one wild or homegrown ingredient. So more, you know. So the venison
more
plus
stuff. Like, I totally get you.
Yeah, less store bought stuff, more
there
wild.
Are these
stuff.
Things called? Have you been to one of these? It's called a store. They sell various food items and novelties that you might use to feast upon. Have you been to one of those?
No, I appreciate your I appreciate your ability to harvest as much as you can. We started my garden today.
No, I'm jealous. It's all out of jealousy. all my plants died except for my green onions, so if you needed some green onions, I'll chop them up and ship them to you.
I still got ours. We started ours way too late. Like, we're still getting peppers and tomatoes, but it's like it's about to snow any day. So, like,
I'm pretty sure green onions would grow in a pile of dirt on a kitchen counter. So, I mean, they can grow in a glass of water. They don't even need dirt. So, you know,
There you go.
It's kind of like a backhanded compliment that they're actually surviving to me.
All right, let's do final thoughts. Corey, you're up first.
Well, I hope Colin is able to get something soon so he doesn't have to take his frustration out on me. So, good luck to you the rest of the season, Colin.
Thanks. But,
yeah. Yeah.
So what I think should happen is that Colin should come to Pennsylvania and hunt with you.
I'll be in Pennsylvania over Thanksgiving. For the beginning of the season. So I don't know if I'll be up in Corey's way. Corey's still like 6 hours away from me, but yeah, I'll be around. You can down to Unit 5B if you want to.
Yeah, I'm at the other corner of the state.
Yeah.
All right. Well, any other thoughts, Corey?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, over to Colin. Colin.
Cool. Yeah, I shouldn't be so pessimistic. I mean, I didn't get an elk in Oregon, but I am going to get a Washington elk tag. I probably won't be able to go out there for the whole week, but a few days at least. I did actually see some elk on my drive back from Seattle the other day, sitting in that unit in the middle of a swamp, which I'm pretty sure was private land, but there's plenty of public around it. Other than that, I still have the rest of Oregon deer season, which I'm going to go out there and pick up my trail cams and hopefully find a deer or bear. Because bear's open right now too. And then, yeah, I've got my PA deer seasons opening up at the end of November. So there's still some more opportunities. And my nutria spots closed down, so bummer, I won't have any more swamp rat to eat. So, yeah, and then they have, like, fee pheasant hunts here, which I was thinking about doing. And I come on the fence about the fee pheasant ones. They just kind of raise them and then set them loose. You know, I'd rather do the wild stuff, but I think it's good. It all goes back to conservation for ODFW, Oregon's Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Nice.
So we'll see. Yeah. And then, awesome. Yeah, those are my last thoughts, really. I still have. See, the difference is even though I'm still on it, Corey, I haven't let it go yet. I might not get six deer a year, but I'm still eating the elk I got from last year. So I still have, like, at least 15 or 20 pounds left in my freezer.
And
so,
only ever
that's my
tasted,
consolation.
Yeah, I've only ever tasted elk once, so you got me there.
But and was it better than any deer you've ever tasted?
It was in a stew, so it was hard to distinguish it from just venison.
Yeah.
Did it have chestnuts in it?
It did not, no.
Okay then.
I'll send you some. I know you're hurting for some meat right now, so yeah. I'll send you some.
All right. Thank you. Scraping the bottom.
All right. Well, I'm taking away from this this episode is we've got a lot of lessons learned. We created a cool meal. And also I think one of the main lessons that Colin shares is that keep plugging, right? Keep out there, keep getting outdoors, keep getting outside. Not only do you increase your chances of coming across whatever target species you're looking for, but you also get to have cool experiences like mountain lion encounters and bears and bobcats and other hunters, good or bad. And, you know, Corey wouldn't be as successful as he is if he didn't get outside. And then I think, too... I want to keep this segment going. I think the Make a Meal was fun. Did you guys like it?
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it was fun. I enjoyed it. So we'll keep that going. If you guys have a meat that you would like us to make a meal with, send us a message on Instagram at harvestingnature.com. Send us a message, and one of us will check it, and we'll give you a thumbs up back or some sort of communication back, and then we'll put it on the next podcast. But, like, say, please talk about this meat / cut on the next Make a Meal, and we will do it. And then we'll let you know which episode it's going to be in. So that'll be super fun. But I think for all those out there listening, please make sure you're following us on social media so you can stay up to date with all the camps, magazine, spices, podcasts, adventures, whatever we're doing. Stay up to date on those going on. And then whatever podcast platform you're listening to, punch that 5-star button. Leave us a review. Tell us what we're doing wrong. Or, you know, tell us we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.